From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on a train from Orlando, Florida to Miami. If you want to drive that route, it takes a minimum of 3.5 hours, a lot more depending on traffic and the time of day. And this distance is in a category that planners often describe as too long to drive, too short to fly. Well, now there is a third option there. The Brightline East high-speed rail takes passengers from Orlando to Miami in just over 3 hours, less than the time it takes to drive. It makes 6 stops, moves at a top speed of 125 miles per hour. That's not quite what we see in Europe. The TGV in France, for example, runs around 190 miles an hour. Amtrak maxes out at 110, but most of the time it's running way under that in the double digits. You know that probably, and it makes a lot of stops that are unplanned. Well, one of the recent Brightline passengers was New York State Senator Jeremy Cooney. Senator Cooney chairs the Transportation Committee. He's offered a very ambitious set of ideas about the future of transportation in this state. And this month, he wanted to see what it's like riding high-speed rail in Florida. He wanted to know, is this what we should be pursuing for New York State? Well, today we welcome Senator Cooney back to the show, talking about what he experienced there, what he thinks is affordable, realistic, etc. He is fresh off being reelected. It's our first conversation after the election. Senator Cooney, welcome back to the program. Thank you for being here.
Always great to be with you, and thanks for having me.
And you just won re-election. Everyone who runs for office, whether you win or lose, says it's exhausting. You're happy it's over. Are you in that category? Are you ready to get past the election season?
Well, I'm looking forward to getting back to work on behalf of New Yorkers, and there's no good way to do that, no better way to do that than to sit on a train and start dreaming big about what we could bring to New York State.
In a moment, just a few minutes, we're going to bring in Joe Alston, who is the Director of Government Affairs for the Business Council of New York State, who was with you on that train. So this is just a few days ago, yeah?
Yeah, just literally last week. So we took a breather after the election, but then we got right back to work and brought a group of stakeholders together down in Florida, where it was the Business Council, it was myself, as well as Siemens, which is, of course, a German technology engineering firm that is developing the technology behind the high-speed rail, and then Brightline itself, which is that private high-speed rail provider going from Central Florida in Orlando down to Miami.
Brightline has Brightline East, which is Orlando to Miami. Brightline West is Vegas to LA. Mm-hmm. And again, 125 miles an hour at a top speed, 6 different stops, and you're still getting there faster than a car does. It's been, I think, open a year or two now. And this is not a blue state. We often talk about, we're going to talk this hour about, well, you know, high speed rail, those kind of projects, those are liberal dreams. This is very much a red state, where Donald Trump won by almost 13 points in this recent election, and they've got a high-speed rail line. What did you experience? Take us through what it was like.
So we've been talking about high-speed rail as New Yorkers, as Rochesterians, since Louise Slaughter first started talking about this 20 years ago. And just to remind your listeners, I started my career in public service working for the late Congresswoman. And she was really a visionary in thinking about mass transit and how to open up upstate New York and, of course, Rochester, Buffalo, Niagara Falls, which she then represented previously. But I keep on reminding folks that we've come so far in these last 20 years in terms of technology, in terms of rail technology, but also just the environment that we're in. When the Congresswoman was talking about high-speed rail, a lot of times it brought up visions of the bullet train in Japan, right? And it was really that kind of avant-garde technology that was isolated to East Asia. Obviously, as you mentioned earlier in the show, Evan, you know, what we're seeing in Europe now in terms of the availability of higher speed rail and high speed rail. Sometimes folks defined high speed rail as 185 miles per hour and more. It all depends on the context of which you're in. But we've really come a long way. And I think now in 2024, and I look at New York State and in my capacity as the chair of the Senate's Transportation Committee, is New York is not leading the way when it comes to rail. States like Florida, states like Virginia, states like Texas, states like California, and states like Nevada are the ones who are making those critical infrastructure investments. And you mentioned the fact that, you know, obviously Florida is a red state, and we were not looking at that as a swing state anymore in this recent presidential election. But what it says to me is that transportation and infrastructure is certainly one of those bipartisan issues. Whether you're a Republican governor, whether you're a Democratic governor, you see the value because the citizens that you represent at the state level, they want this. They want this technology. They want this ease of commuting. They recognize the environmental benefit, and it's worthy of either public or private investment. Now, Brightline is interesting because it is private investment. And so my experience last week in Florida, it was a very, very quick trip, but we flew into Orlando, met as a group, got to understand how the technology was being put together. And then we got on a train bright and early the next morning in Orlando, you know, got to experience what it's like to walk into that ticketing station. And it's really high tech. It's a very smooth and easy process, whether you're a business traveler or a leisure traveler. We got on the train, got a tour of the train itself, and then off we went. Off we were there, and we were going right down, kind of speeding along at that 125 mile per hour. I couldn't feel that we were going 125 miles because it was such a smooth, quiet experience. Then once we got down to West Palm Beach, speaking of our president-elect, right in the backyard of Mar-a-Lago. No, I did not go anywhere near that space.
I don't think you were invited.
I don't think I was invited, and no. That's okay. But once we got to West Palm Beach, that's where they have more regular stops. So mm-hmm. It stops in Boca Raton. It stops in Fort Lauderdale on the way down to Miami. So that actually goes a little bit slower than the 125. That's really around that 80 miles per hour. And then we got to Miami, got off the train, and I flew right back home. But the overall experience was not only was it interesting to ride the train and to see the technology up hand, but just to see how many other people were enjoying and having experience, seeing business travelers with their laptops out, working and being productive, seeing families, you know, being able to fly out of a different airport than perhaps they were living close to. It just became a seamlessly integrated part of their transit system in Florida. And that's what I want for New York State.
How was the quality of the actual ride, the comfort of the ride?
One of the executives who founded Brightline came from the hospitality industry. So you could see that his mindset and his experiences with our senses were all taken into consideration. So there's a signature scent. Right? It's a citrusy scent. It sounds silly, but it's not overwhelming, but it's like when you walk into a hotel and you're like, oh, that smells kind of nice,
okay,
right?
Yeah.
It's the same type of environment. The sounds were pleasant, right? You know, you go into some of our large airports or train stations in New York City, right? You can barely understand what they're saying on the loudspeaker, right? Not that type of environment. It was just very natural, right? In terms of, you know, how you'd get from point A to point B. The actual train itself was incredibly quiet. You know, I've ridden Amtrak here in New York State, headed down to New York City or going to the state capital in Albany. You're kind of going back and forth. You're kind of wiggling around a little bit, the train, depending on the track, right? Not that at all. I mean, it's smooth. Pencils aren't rolling off the table, right? You know, the Wi-Fi worked, you know.
Seats are comfortable?
Seats are super comfortable. And here's a fun fact, and only probably on the private side could they do this. The leather that are on the seats and all the seats, right, is made by the same manufacturer that makes the leather for some of these luxury cars, right? So they've really taken that experience of hospitality into consideration for their customers.
Now, I forgive me for not having all the data in front of me here. Brightline's a private company.
Yes.
They had to have been getting subsidies to get this thing done.
Well, that's the interesting part. So, and they explained this to me, and I kept on asking the question, what am I missing here? Because this seems too good to be true. What's interesting is the toughest barrier, if you will, or you know, to getting high-speed rail or any sort of mass transit system underway is land use and the permitting, so that you can go from Orlando to Miami with the control and not obviously cutting through neighborhoods and all that kind of thing. And the way that they were able to do this is the financiers behind this private company were able to control the existing freight line. So in, you know, Rochester and upstate New York, we talk about CSX being the freight line provider up here. They had a different system in Florida. They took control of that. That gave them that right of way. So there really wasn't a huge ask of the state or local governments. What we have found, though, and what they have experienced, is that local governments are wanting to get in, be part of this. So they want to build a station. So they're willing to build, a town or a city is willing to build that infrastructure, a station, so they can connect to Brightline. So that's the investment that they're making.
All right. So here's what we will do, listeners. I haven't even mentioned a phone number. We've got three or four phone calls blowing up already here. It's 844-295-TALK. I hesitate to give it because people want to talk about this. And I'm going to bring in Joseph Alston, who is the Director of Government Affairs for the Business Council of New York State. He's going to talk about his experience on this. And then in our second half hour, we're going to get a little bit more in depth with how the senator, he's not predicting the future. He's going to talk about what he sees as possible routes to actually achieving this, because there are important considerations. Will there be land available? Who owns it? How do you get it? Should there be taxpayer expenditure? What can we afford? So all of those things are in play here. By the way, a couple emails already. What's it cost to go from Orlando to Miami? It's a range. $79 is the cheapest ticket, up to $270 or so. If you want a not just a couple of carry-ons, but drinks, snacks, et cetera. Does that sound about right to you?
Yeah, it's dynamic pricing. So just when you purchase a plane ticket, sometimes the ticket's more closer you are to your date of travel.
I'm going to grab Bill from Cayuga. He's been waiting. I'm going to get that call, and then we'll bring in Joe. But Bill, thanks for waiting. Keep it tight. Go ahead, sir.
Hi. I remember years ago there was talk of a high-speed train up Route 17, and my immediate thought was, wow, I can get down to New York City and see a play and come home maybe the same day. Then I realized, at the time I was working for a land trust, and I realized we could have a tremendous pressure on seasonal homes up here in the Finger Lakes with a high-speed rail. And so I realized it was a mixed blessing having such a thing, which heightens the reason to protect open space and vistas here in central New York and all of New York. And I'll sign off.
Okay. Thank you very much, Bill from Cayuga. Anything you want to add there, Senator?
I would just say that, you know, obviously Route 17 cuts down from the southern tier into downstate, you know, and there's no particular corridor or route, and we can talk about that more in detail later on.
Yep.
But I think you're absolutely right, Bill. We don't want to obviously sacrifice all the many wonderful things that we love about upstate New York, including our vistas, just to make way for development. So this is part of the way we would look at this is, what is the existing infrastructure? Can we build alongside of it so that we're not disturbing our environmental components?
Let me bring in Joseph Alston, who's the Director of Government Affairs for the Business Council of New York State. Hello, Joe.
Hello. How are you? Well, thanks for having me.
Great. I want to ask you what your experience was like down there on, again, it's called Brightline. That's a private company, high-speed rail from Orlando to Miami. What did you experience, Joe?
Well, Brightline, they had a number of different things happening there. It was really eye-opening. We're talking high-speed rail up to 125 miles an hour, in which the trains can actually go faster. Very comfortable ride. When they spoke to us, they told us how, you know, the person who sort of created the concept of, Brightline down in Florida actually ran a chain of Lowe's hotels, which is one of the reasons why everything is just so comfortable. They have kiosks. They even have the fragrances you would smell at a resort. So it was really interesting. So not to mention, in New York State, high speed rail has been, you know, talked about for a long time. And here at the Business Council, our president and CEO, Heather Mullican, has been a huge proponent of high speed rail. And of course, Senator Cooney has been the champion for investment in high speed rail. So, you know, we thought this was the perfect opportunity to go down there and see how other states and leaders in the industry were doing.
Well, Joe, I want to ask you about your position with the Business Council, and when you look at high-speed rail, its possible impact here. There's been, for a number of years, there's been a kind of stereotype that high-speed rail is the progressive dream. It's the blue state dream. And one of our listeners already pointed out, California, yes, Brightline operates from Las Vegas to L.A., so part of California there. Brightline operates in Florida. But when California has pursued high-speed rail in other parts of the state, it's been start-stop. Money has run out. Costs have overrun. Projections have not been high enough. And it's been hard to get it done. And so it carried a little bit of this stereotype. Well, now we see Texas. We see Florida, Nevada. These are not blue states, per se. And we are seeing more investment, but more on the private side, as the senator had talked about. So are you coming at this from the perspective, Joe, of saying, hey, we just think for businesses generally in New York State, we need it. We don't care who pays for it. Do you want to see it, you know, sort of privatized? I mean, what does a solution look like for you, Joe?
Well, I think that first, you know, let's unpack that, right?
Yep.
So I think high-speed rail is a bipartisan issue, right? I think it doesn't really matter, you know, if you're in a blue state or red state. I think that, you know, anyone that can take advantage of high-speed rail, it would basically spawn numerous economic development in those particular areas. And we see that in Florida, right? You know, along the rail lines, they have affordable housing that they have built. You know, big businesses have been expanded and created. Tourism has increased. So, you know, I think that in New York State, it would definitely take some sort of public-private partnership to get this done.
Okay. Well, and so let me ask the senator a little bit about that. And Joe's with us for a few more minutes here. But when it comes to a formula here, New York State's not Florida, we're not Nevada, we're not California, everybody's got different circumstances. But do you go into this now with fresh eyes saying, I like what Brightline does, we can do something similar, or we're going to have to subsidize more, or what's it kind of look like to you right now?
Well, again, I think the environment has changed. So Joe's absolutely right in terms of thinking about the economic development opportunities, especially for upstate cities like Buffalo, Rochester, Syracuse, Utica, Albany, in terms of what this potential could be. For me, it's about setting the stage. So whether that's a private provider like Brightline or another one, or whether it's Amtrak coming in, because Amtrak is looking at their own high-speed rail projects in states like Texas, for example. You know, at the end of the day, it's about making sure that we're providing a vision and the leadership and taking all those governmental functions and making it easier. So one of the things that Brightline talked to Joe and I about was that the state of Florida made it easy for the permitting process, right? So that when they came in, they already had control of the asset, they had right-of-way access, and it was really kind of a plug and play. Yes, there was a large investment, but all of that bureaucratic function, which could take years to do as a governmental body or municipality by municipality, right, was off the table. They were able to move to market quickly. I mean, we think about Brightline, Florida specifically, right? That was it started in 2014, and they're fully operational right now. So we're less than 10 years. Sometimes when we talk about high-speed rail in New York State, we're talking about 20, 25 years. That's way too long, right? People have moved on. The technology has changed. The economic circumstances have changed. So being able to move to market quickly is, I think, a really key component. So if we set the stage here in New York with those issues of right-of-way and land use, and I think we could then go out to bid, whether that's an Amtrak, whether that's a private provider. And I think that there would be a lot of interest because the business proposition has shown that this can be a profitable concept. So, you know, we're not a Midwestern state without an economic hub, right? We have New York City. And the key, and what Joe and I agree on, is that how do we connect New York City to the Toronto metropolitan area. We know that Toronto is now bigger than the city of Chicago. And so we have two economic hubs. Can we use rail to connect those two hubs and then benefit all of these upstate cities, including the Rochester region?
And so some of what you're talking about with Florida, getting it done faster than the timelines that we might see here, I'm thinking of even just one state to our south. Governor Shapiro has talked a lot in the last year about the need for, in his view, we just had a campaign. He's talking about Democrats. He said Democrats have to show that we can be builders, that we can get things done and we can do it quickly. And he said, we're not talking about eliminating regulations or environmental review, but we are talking about streamlining in ways that are a lot more efficient. And he points to, so a big section of I-95 collapsed in Pennsylvania. Governor Shapiro presided over a reopening of that, a collapsed part of highway, 12 days later. Mm-hmm. And he said, I mean, it was hard to believe that it could happen, but they were not going to get bogged down in overly cumbersome reviews, delays, et cetera.
And look what another Democratic governor did in Maryland, right? Wes Moore, right? When the bridge collapsed in outside of Baltimore, right? And it was Governor Moore who also, like Governor Shapiro, said, we're going to rebuild this. We're going to make sure this is
safe. So you think something's happening here?
Something's happening.
We talk about housing, you know, building more housing. It seems like your party, you're a Democrat, is interested in seeing more stuff get done, for lack of a better phrase. That's a very articulate phrase. You know, again, not throwing regulation to the wind, but to say we have to, it can't be a 25, 30 years. No one's going to do it. It's never going to happen. So is that where we're going?
I think what we're all agreeing is that results matter. The proof is in the pudding. Wait, what were you, you said you want to do this. Were you able to get it done? Right. And I think governors and mayors are perfect examples of being able to be the doers, not necessarily the dreamers, but the doers. And I think that's what, whether you're Republican or you're Democrat, are looking for our elected officials to be able to deliver.
Joe, you want to add to that?
Yeah, I just think that, you know, especially if we're going to also get private investments, 15, 20, 25 years is just way too long.
Yeah.
We definitely have to, you know, have a vision of about 10 years because, you know, particularly with big corporations, they're looking at the bottom line and how we can move forward with in terms of economic impacts sooner than later. But the one thing about, you know, the Brightline trip that I was very, very interested in was the fact that once they actually created the train systems and all of the infrastructure that goes along with it, a lot of municipalities now are saying, hey, Brightline, listen, we'll build the hub, we'll build the station, we'll contribute to the track infrastructure, just make sure that you come to us. So, you know, in New York, if this is something that we're able to get done, I'm almost positive that everyone would be on board with that. I mean, it's happening in Florida. It's happening in California. They're talking about Texas. This is happening, and we can't be left behind.
So, Joe, before I let you go here, got a couple of emails about Amtrak, which is, again, the existing part of the existing system. How do you assess, Joe, from a business perspective, the existing rail system in the state?
I mean, the existing rail system, you know, for now, it works to a degree, but it's definitely not high speed. I mean, if we want to, you know, sort of move on from that or add to it, we definitely going to have to, you know, spend dollars to upgrade the tracks and the infrastructure so that, you know, we can give, you know, people a better experience. I mean, again, you know, high speed rail would bring, you know, tons of economic development opportunities, good paying jobs, workforce development when we're talking about our institutions and our college institutions, along with other things such as affordable housing. I mean, we can almost be done or contribute a lot to the housing crisis in New York State just with affordable high speed rail. So if we can get this done, you know, it will be a wonderful thing. As far as the Accela and the Amtrak, it works for now, but there's much, much more that can be done.
Joe, thanks for making time for the program.
Thank you.
Joseph Alston. Yeah, Joseph Alston, director
of... speak with you, Senator.
Always good to hear your voice, Joe.
All right, have a good one.
They got to ride together on the Brightline last week down from Orlando to Miami. It's a high-speed rail that's been open for a couple of years now in Florida. Joe's the director of government affairs for the Business Council of New York State. Let's cycle through some of your feedback here. Jillian had sent a note about Amtrak. She said, none of this means much if the Amtrak schedule isn't increased. One trip from Buffalo to Rochester a day. I wanted to take the train to a Bills game, but I can't do that unless I stay overnight. Amtrak, in general, needs a lot of work. Jillian, thank you for that. That's, I mean, yeah, we're not just talking business. You're talking about leisure as well.
Absolutely.
Being serviced here.
Absolutely. We want more options for mobility for New Yorkers, period, right? So whether you're going to a destination point like New York City or Toronto, or you're going to one of our other upstate cities. I mean, we've got Micron coming to bear right in Syracuse or central New York. And, you know, if you're working and living in Rochester and you have an opportunity to work on supply chain work or a construction job, this helps you get to the Syracuse market, right, in a much more efficient and fast way.
And before I grab Robert and Hal on the phone, if you are living in the Rochester area and you're thinking about a job in Syracuse, you can drive there. You can have a commute. But the difference in productivity when you are not driving is unbelievable. And I think that that will change the culture pretty fast if people actually do it. But maybe that is me being pie in the sky.
Well, and there's also the safety component, right? So, you know, someone who spends a lot of time on the New York State Thruway, driving to Albany or driving to different parts of the state, I can tell you that, you know, we see a lot of accidents. We see, speeding. We see inclement weather, right? All things that keeps our families, from traveling on a regular basis by personal automobile. So especially as we have an aging population in upstate New York, right? This is a safe way to visit loved ones and family members. To be able to use reliable, safe transit. And I think if again, this high-speed rail system, whether it was privatized or whether it was through Amtrak that was operating, I think you'd see a high demand. And when I've been on the show before and we've had members of ESPA, the Empire State Passenger Association, which is an advocate for rail passengers, they've talked about the fact that a lot of our existing Amtrak passenger trains are fully booked out. It's hard to get tickets, right? There's such a demand for it, whether you're a student coming to the Rochester region after holiday break or whether you're trying to go on business. There's a huge interest already. And imagine if we were going 20, 30, 40 miles per hour faster and cutting those commute times in half.
All right, Robert in Fairport on the phone. Hello, Robert. Go ahead.
Yeah, interesting ideas here. These were studied before the WGRZ in Buffalo actually published an article in March of 2023. They noted that this whole project was going to cost $6 billion back in 2017. You look at inflation, that's about $8 billion right now. It took New York State 14 years to complete the environmental impact statement for this. 14 years. I mean, if you're looking at barriers for actually doing something like this, you got to look at the state of New York. This is never going to happen. It's the high-speed rail they're talking about here would cut 90 minutes out of a trip from Niagara Falls to New York City.
Robert, thank you. I think you might have missed the previous 10 minutes of the program. We did talk a lot about the changing disposition toward study and doing. And Senator Cooney, I'm not going to speak for you. You acknowledge that a 14-year study is not going to make anything happen.
It's not. And I think what Robert may be referring to is what the state DOT has come up with called their 90B plan, which would create a higher speed rail system. It's not the same high speed rail that we're talking about that we saw in Florida. But what this would do is, and as Robert kind of mentioned, it would increase the speed west of Schenectady, west of Albany, essentially, to about 90 miles per hour. We're hovering around 75 miles per hour right now. And then speeds of 110 miles per hour when you're going south from Albany down to New York City. And that is a 20-year process. It did go through a long environmental review, and that's on the existing Amtrak line. Some of the challenges that come along with that plan, and again, it's a good step in the right direction. It's going to increase service. It's going to make things a little bit faster. But some of the challenges that you're sharing a freight line rail, right? And it's not the same speed or capability of speed because you don't have that dedicated rail line. So I think, you know, the conversation should move beyond just what we can currently do on our existing rail system and infrastructure. What if we looked at a different route? I mean, one of the things that is interesting about Brightline West, which is what goes from our Las Vegas to Los Angeles. It's currently being built right now. In fact, we saw under the Bipartisan Infrastructure Act, $3 billion of federal dollars that the Biden administration put towards Brightline West. And what it does is it goes along an existing interstate road between Las Vegas and Los Angeles, one that's, by the way, highly congested. So much car demand on that road already. And what they're doing is they're building these tracks right down the median. So, you know, that's an example of using that right-of-way and that existing
infrastructure. The median of what, Senator?
The median of that interstate. And I can think of another great interstate.
That has a median?
That has a median that's right in our backyard that starts with a 9. Right?
The New York State Thruway.
That's right, the 90.
You're not saying this is a done deal, but you're saying it is plausible in your mind that we could see a Brightline-style high-speed rail that runs largely down the middle of the New York State Thruway.
I think it's worth having that conversation, right? I mean, I think we have seen a lot of improvements made to the Thruway over the course of the last 25 years. Obviously, there's already the land use issues already figured out. But
that's
a big one. That's a huge barrier. And again, that's part of why Robert was so frustrated, is because that's what takes all that time and environmental review. For good reason, I would say, because we want to learn from the 1970s and not build more, you know, interloops, right, where we're destroying neighborhoods and creating environmental justice issues for underserved communities. We want to learn from that. But if we already have a dedicated transportation infrastructure system in place that we can integrate high-speed rail into, that removes those barriers, and perhaps that is an attractive business proposition to a private provider. Not Amtrak, that would allow them to come in and make that significant investment so that's not falling on taxpayers.
All right, let me grab Hal, who's been waiting. Hello, Hal, go ahead.
Thank you very much. This is a wonderful topic. Glad to have Senator Toomey and yourself so up to date. 50 years ago in Japan, I was going 150 miles an hour on the Shinkansen, the bullet, through Japanese cities. 25 years ago, I was going 200 miles an hour in Europe on what they call the ICE trains. I've also taken Amtrak not only downstate, but also through Chicago towards Spokane, Denver, and the Southern Chief. So my observations cross with several of your comments. For example, to have high-speed rail, you cannot use freight lines, and you cannot use typical crossings. So in Germany, what they've done is they lower the line several feet, meters below the soil line, and they put up a green barrier, so with holes in it. In other words, basically, you can see where you're going. You're going 200 miles an hour. You're passing the Autobahn cars going 100 miles an hour. And yet there's no problem with freight tracks, which are huge, or crossings. And so to get to your insightful point you just made, not only is the New York State Thruway 90 east and west, but the combination of that and the existing ownership of the New York State Canal Route, maybe between both of them, we could have east-west travel, at least from Albany to Buffalo, at uninterrupted and high speed and make stops along the way. So what about that?
Okay, Senator?
Well, Hal, thanks for sharing your experience, and it's interesting to think about your travel experiences having, you know, been so diverse in terms of the different speeds that you were able to achieve when riding. I'll make note that in our research, 29 countries outside of the United States already have some sort of high-speed rail system in place, and they're defining high-speed rail as 125 miles per hour or more. And some of them are in less developed nations than the United States. I can think of one that connects in Central Europe over to Hungary. That's where I spent some time in my undergraduate years in Budapest. So the idea is that this is already happening in other places. And, you know, can we utilize our existing infrastructure to become, you know, a ripe, fertile area for further investment, again, either on the private side or on the public side? I do want to note that one of Joe's comments was about housing. And when I think about the areas that the Thruway, the 90, hits upon in upstate New York, all of these cities, including Rochester, are desperate for more housing development. And one of the things I saw when I was in Florida, and this is very interesting, not just in Orlando and not just in Miami, but in these smaller mid-sized cities in southern Florida, the development, we call it transit-oriented development, that popped up around these stations is incredible. And all of them included housing. Whether they were large apartment buildings, whether they were single-family townhouses, these neighborhoods have been transformed in a very positive way based around access to this commuter rail system. And we're seeing that, you know, with higher speed rail, not high speed rail, but higher speed rail in Virginia right now, outside of Washington, D.C. All of this, you know, new rail infrastructure is going in, connecting these mid-sized cities and towns, and you're seeing more housing and businesses sprout up along the way. So oftentimes in the transportation world, we think about transit mobility. I really look at this as economic mobility. We are creating opportunities for people to get to work, but also creating those job opportunities in areas that don't have those same jobs. Let me just make one more point, because when Hal was talking, I was thinking about who was producing this type of technology. And I want to make very clear something that's kind of ironic to me. A couple of weeks ago, Senator Schumer made an announcement in Horseheads, New York, so upstate New York, that Siemens Mobility was going to be building a new facility, a plant in Horseheads. They're going to be hiring about 300 people. They're going to be making the high-speed rail cars. So New York State is going to be making all of these high-speed rail cars for Brightline West, for Brightline Florida, for some of Amtrak's high-speed rail projects in Texas, right here in our own backyard. Why are we not worthy of having this own technology implemented? And, you know, it's a lot less to ship a train car to Rochester than it is to Sacramento.
Briefly, before our only break, just one other question on that. Is it likely to you that it would be a company we've never heard of, a new company, a Brightline, an Amtrak that would be... Again, I know it's a sensitive question because long way to go there, but who are the kinds of companies that we might see do this here?
Well, we have a great relationship in New York State with Amtrak. There's obviously always rooms to improve, but I think you're going to see more companies like Brightline. So whether it's Brightline or another type of company, because these are so profitable, right? So, you know, these are shareholders, these are business folks who are looking at the viability of
this. They'd have to be convinced it would be profitable.
Correct. So if we're creating, again, we're setting the stage. If we are creating the corridor, identifying the corridor, and then creating all the permitting, and then selling that as an asset, right? I mean, what Brightline was doing is they're actually paying a leasing fee back to the state of Florida, right? So this could actually be a revenue generator for the state, right? So not only are we going to get all the economic impacts that Joe and the Business Council were exploring, but we're actually going to see a revenue derived from this. So, and by the way, we're going to give the citizens of the state of New York what they're looking for.
Short break. We're way late for that, and some really good questions and points to squeeze in from your emails next with Senator Cooney. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on The Next Connections, investigative journalist David K. Johnston joins us first hour. He has covered Donald Trump extensively for decades, written books about him. He talks about what a second Trump term could be like. And then in our second hour, a conversation with leaders in the local labor movement. What do the labor leaders want our political leaders on both sides to learn from the recent election? This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Jennifer writes to say, high-speed rail is great, but I would definitely be visiting New York City more often if there was a fast train there. The problem with the high-speed rail in New York is that there is no transportation within each city to support the train. If you arrive in Rochester on a high-speed rail, how are you then going to get around town? There would have to be a really good bus system or a subway or public transportation, which there is not. People won't use it if there's going to be difficulty getting from the train station to a final destination. What do you think?
Oh, she's absolutely right. We always talk about this in the transportation world as that last mile, that connectivity. This is why I fought so hard to expand the Louise Slaughter train station into a truly intermodal station so that our long-distance bus services, so like Trailways or FLX bus, right, that they come in and you can connect to, you know, RTS and you know, use that bus system if that's it. Or, you know, you call an Uber or a Lyft or, you know, that type of connectivity is critical. You know, we're seeing that play out right now in New York City transit news with the investment in the MTA and their capital plan to have more subway lines to outer boroughs or, you know, underserved areas like East Harlem to get the second half subway to get up there. It'd be great. You can get into Penn Station, you can get into Grand Central, but how do you connect with via subway or bus to these neighborhoods across the five boroughs? So she's right. We need to make sure that we continue to invest in our upstate bus systems in cities like Syracuse, Rochester, Buffalo. But it's an and proposition.
Well, it could be a chicken and egg thing. If it's going to be a 10-year plan, which is fast for high-speed rail, which is what Florida did, when you got 10 years, communities know it's coming, you might start planning better transportation for when that rail opens, or 8 years, whatever it takes. But that might be me being optimistic, but I don't think it's impossible.
And I think, you know, let's use Syracuse as an example. They have our version of RTS is called Centro in Syracuse. And if Micron, right, is going to be further along, opening up their chip manufacturing facility, semiconductor facility in Clay, New York, my guess is that Centro is already thinking about how do we get dedicated buses, you know, to or from downtown Syracuse out to Clay. If a Brightline or a different rail provider was going to be connecting somehow along the thruway, right, which is kind of dreaming big here, you know, there'd probably be some intersect where you get off the train and there would be a hub, right, to connect to Centro, which then takes you either to downtown Syracuse or out to Micron, right? So I think those are the strategic conversations that will take place. But again, right now, my focus is how do we actually get this corridor identified and how do we create all the permitting issues and get that resolved so that we can be an attractive investment opportunity.
All right, one more email here, talking to Senator Jeremy Cooney, chair of the Transportation Committee, fresh off a win of re-election and fresh back from a trip to Florida where he took some time to experience Brightline East, Brightline Florida, which is Brightline, a private company running high-speed rail from Orlando to Miami. Patrick says, not to take a jab at the flat earthers, with the exception of California and Nevada as a state, you're pretty much mentioning really, really flat places that have high-speed rail. These are basins in the middle of mountain ranges like Las Vegas. I want to know about high-speed rail here, cutting through mountains or eating bedrock of New York or any other Great Lake City. Can you do that? Can you build the rail here without breaking the bank? Is it flat enough? He says, I think your only hope would be to use dead rail lines that have already been leveled. Again, you don't think that that's necessarily the future. A dead existing rail line is not necessarily your vision here.
Well, I think I take Patrick's point. It's a good one, which is, you know, you've already created that space for, I mean, we talked about this again on a previous show. When CSX, our freight line provider in New York, was at its peak, they had four rail lines, right? Not obviously all four of them are in use anymore. But that land was leveled to create that track infrastructure. Even though the tracks are no longer laid down there, that land was leveled to be able to get trains from A to B. And so it is easier to utilize existing infrastructure space like that. That's why I was suggesting perhaps the thruway might be another kind of infrastructure to tag on to. But again, I think, you know, the railroad, when we kind of roll back time here, when we were going out west and we were building these railroads to open up the west in our country, right, they had to face different levels of terrain. That just might mean that the rail technology may have to slow down. This is an important point to make for your listeners. It's actually the Federal Rail Administration, FRA, which sets the speed of these trains. So it's not the local jurisdiction setting a speed limit like we do for personal automobiles, for example. So based on a whole number of safety factors, including terrain type and, you know, other maybe surrounding neighborhoods or environments, they will set the train speed limit. That's why you see that train for Brightline going 125 from Orlando to Miami. I'm sorry, Orlando to West Palm Beach, and then slowing down because it gets denser in population.
All right. I got to get Alex's email in. I promised him I'd do it. He said Alex is sends an email every morning of the show sometimes, and then he's working. And then I missed the fact under a mountain of emails. So, Alex, I've got it. He says, the Amtrak Improvement Act of 1973, passed by Congress, legally enshrines prioritizing passenger rail over commercial. CSX has a failing grade for the New York to Niagara Falls line for having 74% of passengers on time. Anecdotally, I usually have at least a 45-minute delay. I want commercial rail to succeed because it's better for the environment and our roads than trucking. I want high-speed rail because it's 2024 and our infrastructure shouldn't be this weak. Candidly, what needs to happen for there to be a separate high-speed rail in New York, and how can I, a dumb yet passionate voter, help in ushering that in? He concludes by saying, I mean, you'd think that with her administrative sandbagging of the build public renewables provisions and the projected miss of 2030 carbon targets, Governor Hochul will need a big political win to survive re-election. Big green investment that makes a lot of high-paying jobs and low-skilled jobs means happy voters. So Alex says that's his analysis, and he wants to know, what can I do? He says, what can I do to help?
Well, Alex, thanks for your enthusiasm, and I agree with you on many of your points. Let me just you brought up a point about reliability, which is really important. Brightline, very proud to say that they have a 90% or higher on-time rate. It's very efficient. You know, when we're getting off at stations, it's 2 minutes or less, and it's very easy to do so. You don't feel rushed. So they're on time. They're making stops, but they're keeping it on schedule, and they're every hour. And we've heard from, again, transit advocates like Alex and others that we want our rail trains, especially for passenger rail, to have more frequency and more reliability. And that's the promise that Brightline has delivered on. I will also make mention that a lot of the Brightline employees are coming out of mass transit. So former New Jersey Transit, former MTA employees, engineers are now working at Brightline because they've seen some of the challenges with other transit systems around the country, and they're part of kind of changing or disrupting that model to make it better. In terms of what Alex and others can do to support it, you know, voice your opinion that you want high-speed rail. You know, we want you to call your local legislators, your state legislators, and encourage them to, you know, sign on to legislation or to support resources that would go into bringing high-speed rail here. We also want you to share your experiences with us. So if you have, you know, gone on high-speed rail or you've observed it in another state and you want to share something with that, reach out to us. You know, just go to rocksenator.com and reach out, and, you know, we'll be happy to kind of engage with you and keep you up to date with what's happening on this. I think I do want to make one important point. It's not like there's just like I can write a bill, right? And then all of a sudden, this is going to come to fruition. It's working collaboratively with Governor Hochul, with the New York State Department of Transportation, and then with our federal partners. And obviously, we have a new administration coming into the U.S. Department of Transportation, but working with our federal partners to identify this.
Well, you've talked a lot about in the past about working with the federal government, and it looks to be a very different situation with the Trump administration to come. Do you feel like you will have a partnership with them? Do you feel like you'll have a federal government that will seek to inhibit what you want to do?
Well, I'm certainly optimistic that, you know, President Trump is, you know, is well familiar with New York, right? New York City is his hometown. And Brightline, as I mentioned before, was in his backyard in West Palm Beach. So transit, high-speed rail is something that's probably on his radar screen. I will point out that the Biden administration, through the Bipartisan Infrastructure Act, dedicated $8.2 billion to general rail projects. New York State, by the way, did get some of that money to do some of this corridor ID work along the Empire and Adirondack Amtrak train lines. So they're kind of looking at, you know, what's the utilization rate, some of the things that we've discussed on the show so far. So that's where we were. Will we be there in the future? Well, we'll have to see what this Congress does. I mean, there's legislation called the American High-Speed Rail Act that Congressman Seth Moulton has introduced. And that would be a $205 billion infrastructure investment in high-speed rail specifically. You know, whether that is taken up in a Republican Congress, I don't know. But we're going to continue to work with the U.S. Department of Transportation. We've already been in touch with Secretary Buttigieg's office about this and expressed our interest. We're going to continue to work with Governor Hochul. You know, she knows all parts of New York State. Not only is she our upstate governor and you know, knows Buffalo really well and knows upstate cities and towns and villages, but, you know, as lieutenant governor, she was driving on all these roads for years. And so she sees that value of opening up the promise of upstate New York to our downstate neighbors and friends. So, you know, these are all the relationships that we're going to be working on.
About 90 seconds or so. You just won re-election. You have performed very well in elections, even when the Democratic Party nationally, as we saw this year, struggled in many ways. And I want to just ask you what you are taking from this election. What do you think your party needs to take, and what do you think really is behind the rightward shift?
President Biden often used the expression that this campaign or this most recent presidential campaign was a fight for the soul of America. And I think America's got a lot of soul searching that it needs to do. That fight did not end on Election Day. And so whether you're a Democrat or a Republican or an independent or I'm not so sure, whatever, however you identify and your political beliefs, we have to do a lot of thinking about what our values are as Americans and what kind of message we want to deliver to our children and what kind of stewardship we want to do around the world. For me, and I think our campaign was successful, was because we found that balance between how do we deliver for what people are asking us to do. I spent a lot of time knocking on doors. And when I stood up at someone's door and I listened to what they had to say, it often was those kitchen table issues that we often talk about, affordability, community safety, you know, the work that I do at the state house level really is focused around those topics. How do we make healthcare work better? You know, how does it make it more affordable? How do we make sure that our students, whether they're in a suburban or a urban or a private school, are getting the tools necessary to be successful? How are they exposed to careers? How are we taking care of our aging population so that people can live lives of dignity into their later years? That's the type of experience and quite frankly, that's the type of expectation we have for our elected leaders. And I'm going to make sure I do everything in my power to make sure that we're delivering for my hometown of Rochester.
All right. This is a regular standing invitation to come talk about whatever is new when it comes to rail and transportation. And rail isn't the only kind of transportation. He works on his chair of the Transportation Committee. But people are very engaged with that. We see that every time you're here. Thank you for making time for the program.
Well, thanks for having me. And let's remember that transportation can truly change upstate New York and make us a more equitable community for all.
That's Senator Jeremy Cooney. And our thanks to you for listening from the whole team at Connections. Thank you very much. We're back with you tomorrow on member-supported public radio.